I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
If Trump cared about safety, he would stop kidnapping immigrant neighbors. Because terrorizing people, terrorizing families is not safety. If Trump cared about our safety, he would fund Medicaid. He would fund schools. He would fund SNAP. Because people being sick, out of school, and hungry is not safety.
Why has President Trump deployed the National Guard to the streets of the Capitol? Six Republican-led states, West Virginia, South Carolina, Ohio, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Louisiana, have all agreed to send troops. Yet some of their cities have worse crime rates than D.C. We'll go to Washington to speak with the head of the group Free D.C. Then the number. How much is Trump pocketing off the presidency? We'll speak with New Yorker investigative reporter David Kirkpatrick.
I tried to look at all the sources of income flowing into President Trump and his family and decide which of those were derived really from the presidency and how much they were worth. And I came up with about $3.4 billion to date.
And finally, to Florida, where immigrant detainees held at the so-called Alligator Alcatraz are stuck in a legal black hole. So says the ACLU, they've taken the Trump administration to court.
Well, we brought this lawsuit because people who are held at Alligator Alcatraz haven't been able to speak with their lawyers confidentially or request release from custody on bond. We want to make sure that people can actually have that constitutional right to speak to their lawyers and to be able to request release from the detention facility.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli attacks on Gaza have killed at least 56 Palestinians over the past day, even as three more people starved to death amidst Israel's months-long siege. Among the latest dead are 22 more people killed while seeking food. With the latest killings, health officials report the death toll from Israel's 22-month-long bombardment and siege of Gaza has topped 62,000. But that number is likely a vast undercount, as more than 11,000 people remain missing and are presumed dead. The UN says nearly 19,000 children are among the dead. Meanwhile, Gaza is home to the largest number of child amputees in modern history, with over 4,700 cases of children who've lost limbs to Israeli bombs, many of which were supplied by the United States. This is Mohammed Hassan, a boy who lost his leg to an Israeli strike in July that killed his mother and other family members.
I was going to buy falafel. When I came back before reaching home, I looked up and saw the missile falling on us. I tried to run, but it was too fast. I found myself thrown against a wall, and when I looked, my leg was gone. Then someone carried me and brought me to this hospital.
In Israel, protesters led by family members of Israeli hostages blocked a highway in Tel Aviv Tuesday to demand a prisoner exchange and a ceasefire in Gaza. The protest follows nationwide demonstrations Sunday that saw up to a million Israelis take to the streets demanding Prime Minister Netanyahu end the war.
The only thing that works is putting pressure on the Israeli government to make a deal, to seal the deal and bring all of our hostages back and stop the war in Gaza. We will not stop until all our hostages are home.
The United Nations marked World Humanitarian Day Tuesday by issuing a grim report documenting the killing of 383 aid workers around the world last year. That's a 31% rise from the year before, driven largely by the Israeli attacks on Gaza, where 181 humanitarian workers were killed by Israel last year. Meanwhile, 60 humanitarian workers were killed in Sudan as they worked to bring aid to people displaced by civil war. This is UN spokesperson Jens Larke.
This must be a wake-up call to the world. People representing the best of humanity, trying to help others, are being killed in record numbers, and some of them in cold blood.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro says his government is deploying 4.5 million soldiers across Venezuela after the United States said it would be shipping more than 4,000 Marines and materiel to the Caribbean region. This comes after the Trump administration secretly signed a directive approving the Pentagon's use of military force, supposedly to target Latin American drug cartels. The Trump administration's accused Maduro of being the leader of the Cartel de los Soles, offering up to a $50 million reward for information leading to Maduro's arrest, which critics have slammed as another attempt by the United States to destabilize Venezuela and other countries that oppose U.S. policy. Meanwhile, Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum has denied reports her government's collaborating with the United States for a sweeping new initiative dubbed Project Portero to combat drug cartels, which had been touted by the Trump administration as an effort to strengthen U.S.-Mexico relations. Sheinbaum spoke from Mexico City Tuesday.
It's important to aclarar esto.
It is important to clear this up, because any joint communication is done together. We do not validate anything issued by a United States government agency that has not consulted with the Mexican government.
In California, advocates are demanding the release of a high school student who was taken by federal immigration agents earlier this month while he walked his dog in a Los Angeles neighborhood. The family of Benjamin Marcelo Guerrero Cruz described it as a kidnapping, as several plainclothes masked men wearing tactical vests forced the 18-year-old into an unmarked van. Educators and activists are calling on local officials and schools to protect Guerrero Cruz and other immigrant students. The teen is being detained at the troubled Adelanto ICE jail, about an hour and a half from his family in L.A. In more news from California, Customs and Border Protection officers opened fire on a family during an arrest operation in San Bernardino. The family was inside their vehicle on Saturday when armed, masked officers emerged from unmarked cars and surrounded their truck. An undocumented father from Mexico was driving the vehicle. His 18-year-old son and 23-year-old son-in-law, who are U.S. citizens, were in passenger seats. They refused to get out of the vehicle, prompting the officers to smash the windows. Fearing for his life, the driver sped away with the agent firing his weapon. At least two bullets struck the vehicle. Law enforcement reportedly later arrived at the family's home, but no arrests were made due to sanctuary policies that prohibit local police from collaborating with federal immigration agencies. This all comes as the Washington Post reports ICE is planning to double its detention capacity to imprison more than 100,000 immigrants. ICE has already expanded its jails with plans to open new facilities across the country, including in Nebraska, where a remote prison's so-called work camp, dubbed Cornhusker Clink by Republicans, will detain hundreds of immigrants awaiting deportation. We'll have more on ICE's expanding detention machine later in the broadcast with Eunice Cho, senior counsel at the ACLU National Prison Project, who's brought the Trump administration to court over so-called alligator Alcatraz in Florida. in Massachusetts. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu has rejected demands by Attorney General Pam Bondi to dismantle Boston's sanctuary city immigration policies or face arrest and the loss of federal funding. Boston was among 22 local governments across 13 states given a deadline of August 20th, that's today, to comply with the Justice Department order. Mayor Wu spoke outside Boston City Hall Tuesday.
The U.S. Attorney General asked for a response by today. So here it is. Stop attacking our cities to hide your administration's failures. The Trump administration seeks to divide, isolate, and intimidate cities and make Americans fearful of one another. But Boston is proof of something far more powerful than lies and intimidation, that safety and community come from loving your neighbor as yourself.
Federal prosecutors in Washington, D.C. have launched a criminal investigation into President Trump's claims that police manipulated data to make crime rates appear lower. The probe will be run out of the office of Trump's handpicked interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, former Fox News personality Jeanine Pirro. According to the Washington Post, Pirro's instructed prosecutors to maximize criminal charges against anyone arrested during Trump's federal takeover of Washington, D.C. law enforcement, with the exception of people carrying rifles or shotguns in violation of Washington, D.C. laws. In those cases, Pirro said prosecutors should not seek felony charges. President Trump said Tuesday the Smithsonian Institution is too narrowly focused on negative aspects of U.S. history, including, quote, how bad slavery was, unquote. Trump's comments minimizing the horrors of chattel slavery came after the White House ordered a far-reaching review of Smithsonian Museum exhibitions in order to ensure they align with Trump's interpretation of U.S. history. A federal judge has ordered Mississippi to redraw its Supreme Court district lines after determining they violate the Voting Rights Act of 1965. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Sharon Aycock ruled the map, which has remained mostly unchanged for over a century, unlawfully dilutes the power of black voters. Mississippi has had just four black Supreme Court justices in its entire history, even though Mississippi's population is nearly 40% African-American. In Texas, Democratic State Representative Nicole Collier has filed a lawsuit challenging the authority of Republican leaders to put lawmakers under police surveillance. On Monday, Collier was confined to the Texas State Capitol overnight after she refused to be followed by state police monitor assigned to surveil her every move, a requirement for Democrats who'd fled Texas over a plan to redraw the state's congressional district maps to give Republicans five additional seats in the 2026 midterm elections. Collier spent a second night locked in Texas's state capitol Tuesday, joined in solidarity by fellow state representatives. Meanwhile, in California, Republican lawmakers have filed a lawsuit seeking to block a bid by Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom to redraw California's congressional maps to give Democrats five additional House seats. Newsom said the move is specifically designed to counteract Republican gerrymandering in Texas. The Justice Department says it's agreed to provide Congress with documents from its investigation into the dead serial sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. The House Oversight Committee is set to begin receiving the files on Friday after it subpoenaed all records and communications from the case files of Epstein and his longtime co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell. On Monday, Trump's former Attorney General Bill Barr gave a deposition to the Oversight Committee about Jeffrey Epstein after he, too, was subpoenaed. The committee, however, has not issued a subpoena to Alex Acosta. That's President Trump's former labor secretary, who, as a U.S. attorney in 2008 in Florida, approved a non-prosecution agreement that shut down the federal probe into Epstein's sex trafficking ring and allowed Epstein to serve little time in prison. Meanwhile, in a highly unusual move, the Trump administration announced this week it's tapped Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey to be co-deputy director of the FBI. He'll serve alongside Dan Bongino, a former Secret Service agent and right-wing podcaster who Trump previously tapped as the FBI second in command. Bailey's appointment comes after Bongino publicly clashed with Attorney General Pam Bondi and threatened to resign over the Trump administration's refusal to release the Epstein files. And in Minnesota, an appeals court has overturned the felony conviction of a water protector who was criminally prosecuted as part of a brutal crackdown on nonviolent indigenous leaders and protesters opposing the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline. The court found pervasive prosecutorial misconduct and irregularities in the case, ordering a new trial. Mylene Villard was arrested in 2021 after attaching herself to a 25-foot bamboo tower erected to block a Line 3 pumping station in Aiken County. She appeared on Democracy Now! In 2023.
All their children and grandchildren. I'm here because there is a real climate crisis and nobody seems to care. I'm here because that's the only thing I can do right now. I have to show up and I have to defend this land and I have to defend the rights of the people who have been on this land forever.
To see our 2023 interview with Mylene Villard, an Indigenous lawyer and activist, Tara Hauska, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Tennessee has become the sixth Republican state to agree to send National Guard troops to Washington, D.C., to assist President Trump's growing takeover of the nation's capital. The Republican governors of Louisiana, Ohio, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Mississippi are also sending National Guard troops. Many of the troops arrived Tuesday. The Republican governors deployed the National Guard, even though many of the states have cities with worse crime rates than D.C. This comes as the online news outlet, The Handbasket, reports D.C. National Guard members have begun actively training to carry pistols on the streets of D.C. President Trump sent in the National Guard last week after claiming D.C. is facing a crime emergency, even though records show violent crime in the district is at a 30-year low. In January, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia put out a press release headlined, Violent Crime in D.C. Hits 30-Year Low. But President Trump has questioned the numbers, and now federal prosecutors have launched a criminal investigation into whether D.C. police manipulated data to make crime rates appear lower. The DOJ probe will be run out of the office of Trump's hand-picked interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, former Fox News personality Jeanine Pirro. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports a new poll found 80% of D.C. residents oppose Trump's executive order to federalize D.C.'s law enforcement. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser's accused Trump of engaging in an authoritarian push by deploying the National Guard. This is Mayor Bowser speaking Monday.
The numbers on the ground in the district don't support 1,000 people from other states coming to Washington, D.C. You know that. This is not about something that is fits into logic. So if you want to know what's happening, the question is really not for us. It's for why the military would be deployed in an American city to police Americans. That's the question.
Community organizers have rallied against Trump's deployment of the National Guard. This is Samantha Davis, the founder of the Black Swan Academy, which helps empower Black youth.
This is not about crime. This is about control. This is not about public safety. This is about power. Last week, Donald Trump suggested that our children in D.C. as young as 14 should be tried as adults. Let me ask you, do we want that? And Trump's U.S. attorney has said that she wants to come after our youth and was frustrated because I can't get my hands on them. Do we want that?
No!
Trump threatened that if D.C. didn't start punishing our children more harshly, then he would federalize our city. Do we want that?
No!
Trump will not bully us into preying on our children. We will not sacrifice our children to a tyrant.
We go now to D.C., where we're joined by Kaya Chatterjee, the executive director of the group Free D.C. Kaya, welcome to Democracy Now! The number of troops that have been deployed, can you give us an update? We know six Republican-led states have agreed to send troops. And as NPR reported this morning, in a number of cities in these six Republican-led states, the crime rates are worse than Washington, D.C.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me. What we're seeing here is something that would be considered an act of civil war if D.C. were a state, if we had equal representation under the law. There's National Guard coming from one state to another state against the wishes of the elected officials and of the people who are here. So this is clearly straight out of the playbook of any dictator. They want to take over the capital of the country in order to silence dissent. And we actually are very vulnerable to that here in D.C. because we don't have statehood. We don't have equal representation under the law. We don't control our elected officials don't control our own National Guard. These are vulnerabilities that are not just vulnerabilities for the people of D.C., but these are vulnerabilities to the people of this country and our democracy, and therefore vulnerabilities to the entire world that is being put at risk by these by this takeover of D.C., this armed takeover of D.C., that is combined also with this surge of Trump's forces that are, you know, doing a lot of the same things that we're hearing about in the rest of the country in terms of kidnapping people. We're seeing a lot of illegal activity here, too. We're seeing illegal checkpoints. We're seeing, you know, racial discrimination. We're seeing illegal stop and frisk. I mean, that's touching people's genitals without their consent. What we're seeing is lawlessness, but it's all coming from the White House.
That how is it manifesting itself on the ground right now in the daily life of D.C. residents?
Well, people are both very rightly, you know, taking precautions, walking in pairs, letting people know when they're leaving places, because sometimes we're seeing, you know, people going to work and getting snatched up, put in chains. And because these gangs of Trump's federal agents are often unlabeled, they're often wearing masks. We don't know who's taking them sometimes. Family members don't know where their loved ones have been taken. But we're also seeing a sense of defiance in the people of D.C. I think people in D.C. do understand that we have to protect our community, and that also ultimately we as a broader community in D.C., but also we're going to need allies all throughout the country and the world in order to do what people have done as they rise up against dictators all over the world, ultimately take them down by banding together and not cooperating. And so I think in D.C. we have both a sense of defiance, but a leaning into all the things that make D.C. so beautiful, right? Like leaning into our neighborhood culture, loving our neighbors, you know, listening to go-go music on the streets. We have people, banging pots and pans every night at 8 p.m. to represent the eight wards of D.C. These are called cacerolazos. They're tried and, you know, this is a tried and tested tool of taking down dictators by showing a sense of joy, showing a sense of community. And so what we're seeing is a lot of defiance, a lot of pride in D.C. culture, a very clear sense that we, the people, are going to have to keep ourselves safe and take this down. But also, you know, it is a lot of brutality that we are experiencing and that our communities are experiencing. And we want these forces gone now. We want them out of our communities. D.C. is united in this. We do not want want them here. We want them gone today. And so, you know, we have this bill in front of Congress that we're asking our allies around the country to support. They can go to freedcproject.org/allies or freedcproject.org/occupation if you're from any of those states that are sending guards here. That is dangerous not only for us, but of course also for those states where those guards are not available, you know, in the middle of a climate crisis during hurricane season in states that can, that are extremely vulnerable.
I wanted to ask you also your reaction to this report by the Washington Post that the Justice Department is now going to launch an investigation into whether city officials manipulated data to make crime rates appear to be lower, and how you feel your mayor, Muriel Bowser, is responding to this occupation.
Elected officials are following the law, and that is exactly what we are not seeing from the White House. That is where the criminal element is coming from. And so we understand that dictators want to make up their own numbers, want to make up their own truth. We saw this with, you know, labor statistics. We're now seeing it with other statistics. Like, this is all out of a playbook. In some ways, it's very predictable, but it's also very well known what people do and the people power that can come together to take down this kind of dictatorship.
I'm wondering if you can comment on the $1 billion that Congress has withheld from Washington, D.C., what that means, and where money is being spent.
Yes. So $1.1 billion of D.C. local funds, so that is our locally raised funds, were frozen by Congress. I will say that we had a unique moment when this money was frozen, where all of the senators in the U.S. Senate voted to give these resources back. But then it got stuck in the House of Representatives, and they never voted to give our money back. You know, obviously, if they want D.C. to be safe, then they would allow us to fund housing, food, education, all of the things that we know reduce crime rates. And, you know, as I said earlier, if you want to keep D.C. safe, you do the opposite of what this regime is doing. You stop mass firings. You make sure you're funding health care, education, food. Those are the things that enhance safety and having a sense of community. And so we do also continue to demand the release of our local funds and allowing us to spend those resources here in D.C., where, again, we raised these resources locally. There's no other place in this country where the federal government can come in and steal local tax dollars, freeze local tax dollars. So I think it is important for people to understand why this is an important moment for people to care about a free D.C., to care about statehood for the people of D.C., and to actually give us, for once, equal representation under the law. Because the reason we don't have it is a legacy of slavery and a legacy of racism. And this is a moment for people who believe that in equal rights to stand with D.C., because right now you're either with D.C. or you are with tyranny. And whether it's a corporation or anyone else in this, any other entity in this country, this is a moment where people have to decide, are you on the side of the people or are you on the side of this dictator and this tyranny?
I just wanted to ask you about President Trump's threats against the unhoused population of Washington, D.C. This is Jesse Rabinowitz of the National Homelessness Law Center speaking outside the White House.
Locking up people you don't like or don't want to see is textbook authoritarianism. Trump is testing opinion by focusing on groups that he believes to have little public sympathy, like folks who live outside. Right now, they are coming for homeless folks, trans folks, and migrants. But rest assured, soon they will come for everyone who is not a white, straight, cis, wealthy Christian man. The only solution is solidarity and collective action.
Finally, Kia, we're just wrapping up right now. Kia Chatterjee, they've already dismantled the largest unhoused encampment. Can you talk about what's happening to the unhoused in Washington, D.C., as these now it looks like thousands of troops are moving in and now being allowed to carry pistols?
It's incredibly dangerous for our unhoused population. And I think one thing that's important to understand about our communities is that these are community members that are woven into the fabric of our communities in D.C. We have a newspaper called Street Sense Magazine, Street Sense newspaper, that is written by and sold by people who are houseless in our community. These are neighbors who we know. We see them outside. We talk to them every day. And witnessing this brutality is so harmful to our communities and to those people. They are literally putting all of people's belongings into the trash. They are trying to make it a crime to be poor. They are trying to make it a crime to simply exist for people who are poor. We know that sleeping is a biological necessity. And if you say that it is illegal to sleep outside, what you're saying is that somebody's existence is illegal. And that's not just somebody. These are our neighbors. This is our community. They are being treated with such incredible brutality right now, and we need that to end. And that is our fundamental message, is that the